Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. I'm Mike Sweeney, and I'm here with Jesse Gaskell.
That's right. And we will be talking you to sleep tonight.
Yes.
If all of your other sleep aids have failed, we're here for you.
Right.
We're the podcast that brings you all the inside dirt.
Yes. What is this podcast about?
What is it? I mean, in a larger sense, it's about our humanity.
Sure.
And what binds us.
Absolutely.
As living creatures on this earth. But on a micro sense, it's about the inner workings of the Conan show. Mm-hmm. And now just, the Conan orbit.
That's all under the umbrella of humanity? Okay. Yes. You know, actually, there was a little Conan update this week. He just did a cameo on Saturday Night Live.
He did.
Yeah, on the John Mulaney show. So that was
exciting. In the welcoming Mulaney into the Five Timers Club.
Right.
Which he is in with Tina Fey and Steve Martin. And
right.
Probably some dead people. I don't know.
And Elliot Gould, who's still alive.
Oh, yeah.
So he was in the sketch. But Conan hosted once. So the joke was he was saying, they're like, what are you doing here? You're not a five timer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he said, I'm here to sign up for Peacock streaming service.
Oh, okay.
Laughs. I think he was excited to be back in 30 Rock.
I'm sure he was.
Yeah, it's been a while. So, and you know, he worked at SNL for 3 years.
Did you talk to him about it? Did he have a great time?
I think he had a great time. I think he was, yes.
He had to stay up late for that.
He did have to stay up late. And he said the party afterwards went kind of all night.
Oh, he got to go to the party.
That's
the most important part.
Yeah. And he just said, you know, he was hoarse from chatting.
Yeah.
You know, there are all these great people to, I guess, catch up with and talk with all night. So he had a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he got to wear his leather jacket.
Oh, did
he? On TV again. Yes.
I didn't notice.
He was wearing his.
He's always camera ready, I guess. I didn't even
notice
that.
I'd love to imagine that he took a variety of wardrobe options.
Sure.
And they were all the same jacket.
Yes. It's an 18-wheeler carrying leather jackets.
Slightly longer. It was like, I have it in 18-inch length. I have it in 20-inch, 21 inches.
The 18-wheeler with leather jackets left 10 days before the show so it could travel over land.
Yeah, you don't want to ship those.
No.
Because they have to be kept at sub-zero temperatures.
Yeah, I'm not good at caring for leather. I don't have a lot of leather. I don't think I have any leather. I don't have used leather products.
If you've got tips on caring for leather, leave it in the iTunes reviews.
Sure. Oh, also, John Mulaney was great. There were a lot of funny sketches. And he was great. It was nice to see him again.
You know, I haven't watched it yet. I have to be honest. Because I've been working a lot. But also, because I'm in a place where I'm not allowed to watch it. I need a VPN.
Really?
Yes. I can't watch almost anything.
You need a VPN to watch?
Yeah.
Really? Is this a hint as to where you are in some way?
Yeah, that's the hint.
Okay.
Is that I don't have access to all of our sweet American content.
Wow. God, mm-hmm. where could you be?
I know.
And it's super late where you are once again.
It is, which is always fun.
You finished a whole day of shooting and now you're,
yep.
This is how you relax. You kick back and relax.
I had a whole day of work and then I had to try to find a place to eat dinner. It was like 9:30 p.m. and I panicked.
Huh.
Sometimes it's hard to find a restaurant where you can eat something quickly.
Right.
And I ended up at a sports bar and I just ate a fried chicken sandwich. That's what I ate.
All right. Well, these are all additional clues as to where you are. Sports bars.
Mm-hmm.
You're worried about getting a quick meal at 9:30 at night.
Yes.
Interesting.
I know.
Clues are adding up.
So it wasn't the worst. It wasn't the best.
You mean your fried chicken meal?
My fried chicken, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's not a place that specializes in fried chicken, I'll say that.
Right.
I'm not in Kentucky.
Okay.
Who's our guest tonight? We'll say it's night. It feels like a late night.
Sure, yes.
Vibe
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
So as you know, this season has been a look back at Conan's entire late night run.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, who better to tell the story of that late night run better than journalist Bill Carter.
Mr. Bill Carter. Yes, he's a journalist, an author, and he wrote for the New York Times for over 25 years and currently works as a media analyst for CNN.
He wrote a book called The War for Late Night in 2010, which if you haven't read, it's a fast read and it's really interesting. It chronicled all of the Tonight Show drama. And we just thought it would be great to have a real journalist come in and give us perspective on what went down, especially because he had also written a book in 1994 called The Late Shift. And what was really interesting was that was all about Johnny Carson's retirement from The Tonight Show and who was going to take over for him between David Letterman and Jay Leno. And ultimately, NBC chose Leno over Letterman. And then Letterman moved to CBS and began The Late Show.
Right.
But the whole debacle basically kind of mirrored what ended up happening in 2008.
And you know what? A lot of what happened in 2008, the things that in slow motion created this new drama, the steps were taken to hopefully avoid what happened in 1992.
Right.
With Jay Leno and Letterman the first time around.
Don't do that. Just don't do that. Just don't do that. And then that was the exact thing that they did.
They're like, don't choose, you know, one or the other. Try to keep both. And then that was,
totally backfired.
But yeah, the Late Shift, when that book came out, that was just such a big story back then. It is good to know that background for what we talk about today.
Yeah. So with that said, enjoy Bill Carter.
I'm thrilled to do it. I love to talk about Conan. Come on. I started with Conan when he walked into a press conference as a complete unknown, as he said.
Yeah, you've really been there almost since before Conan.
An early adapter.
I was in the room standing next to Lorne Michaels when that happened. So,
what did you think when you saw him?
I thought, he's tall.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very red character. And he has a very charming personality. That's what I thought. And I also thought he has almost no chance to make this work.
Right.
It couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Because who does that? Who picks a guy who's never actually done a stand-up act or, you know, had any experience and gives them a late night show? It's like saying, okay, here you go. Go to your basement and start a show. I mean,
right. But and above that, I don't think anyone thought anyone could follow David Letterman. Anybody.
In a way, that was smart. I was thinking, well, that's the way to go, because if you do anybody else, it's going to look like, oh, they're trying to follow Letterman with another, you know,
right.
And instead, we don't know what we got with this guy. So
right.
Let's roll the dice. And in fact, they had approached people like David Spade and he was like, no way. I'm doing that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to succeed, David Letterman. No, thanks. So,
yeah, no, I'm sure the no's were coming fast and furious.
Yeah, they were.
I'm sure to most comedians, it seemed like a suicide mission. You know, it's.
Yeah, but it's interesting because there's a lot of times that's happened and people will. Well, it happened with Carson, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, nobody can follow Jack Parr. Forget it. Nobody can do that.
Right.
And within like 2 weeks, people were saying, Jack who? I mean, this guy,
right.
Carson, is great. Now, it wasn't like Conan was instant oatmeal. But
right.
But, you know, in except for Carson, you know, starting out, these guys generally don't do gangbusters when they start.
Right.
You need time to find your footing, and eventually the talented people prove it, so...
With the public, it's always like, wait, who's this guy now they're feeding me, you know?
But like, actually, that's why Conan's opening bit on the show was brilliant. I mean, you know, when he basically was told by everybody, you gotta be as good as Letterman.
Right.
And
oh, that was the very first show, right? The cold open?
The very first time we ever saw him on the show was him doing that cold open.
Right.
Which ends with him about to hang himself.
Yes.
You know, it's him going to his first day of work to do the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's always good at, like, kind of trying to suss out what's on people's minds and trying to address it.
Yeah. Right.
That is a good way to immediately connect with people, you know?
Sure. And Conan has played the self-deprecation card brilliantly.
Yes.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might be so. Not an act.
Seems to come naturally.
It can't be at all an act. It can't all be an act.
It is fascinating that you were there the very first day Conan was introduced.
Well, it was just interesting because there was no special reason at that point why I would focus on late night especially, mm-hmm. except, you know, Johnny Carson dropped a bomb at an upfront and said he was leaving. And there was that crazy interregnum where people were like, well, surely Letterman's getting the job. Surely.
Right.
Surely he's getting the job.
Yeah.
And actually, it turns out he never had a shot at the job because he'd already made a contract with Jay Leno, mm-hmm. which you don't find out really easily if you're a Daily News reporter. And I learned in the process of writing books about it is that as a Daily News reporter, you get like 10% of what's going on. And then if you report the thing down to the ground, you find out all kinds of other stuff was going on.
Right.
That the Daily people aren't going to hear about. And that certainly was the case there. So because that piqued my interest so much, you know, all of a sudden I was like, well, this late night story has great legs, you know, so.
You're talking about the original, your big book, The Late Shift, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And Conan obviously is in that too, because
right.
he becomes the guy.
At the tail end there.
Yes, he becomes the guy to succeed Dave after all the machinations about them trying to keep Letterman. So.
Right.
When did you kind of become aware, oh, this is going to make a great book. I've got a book here.
Okay, so I'm reporting the daily events of what's going on with the fact that they screw Letterman over and then they're trying to, they had a year, like 8 months or something left on his contract. So he's still there. He's still at NBC they're trying to keep him and they want him to follow Jay. And so I'm reporting that and I'm talking to people in both camps. I'm talking to Leno people and Letterman people. And one of those people, I probably shouldn't say who, said to me, you know, people think this is being covered day to day and everybody's writing about it. They don't know what's going on. There's a book here.
Your books do read. It really is like All the President's Men, you know, it's just...
That's the idea. That's exactly the idea, Mike. Yeah.
Only the stakes are much higher.
No, but I mean, that's the model. It's mm-hmm. narrative nonfiction, which you don't write like a newspaper story where you say, according to so-and-so.
Right.
Yeah.
You just say, this happened because people have told you that happened.
Yeah.
You know? And you recreate the dialogue when the two sides will tell you what they said.
And so your second book, The War for Late Night, which involved Conan, when did you start to think, I've got a book here? Like, was it...
like, the things are happening the same way they happened before.
Oh, it is interesting, Mike, because the answer might have been when they decided to take Jay out at 10 o'clock and try to move him back, because that's when... That's a dramatic thing that happened.
Very dramatic.
But really, I'd been pushed by publishers a lot after I wrote The Late Shift. I'd said to my agent, I will write another book when there is another book.
Right.
And she was like, yeah, but the publishers want you now. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't have a book.
You'll know it when you see it.
I don't want to do a book under false pretense. Right. So it took me, I don't know, 8 or 10 years before I wrote another book, which was Desperate Networks, it was called,
mm-hmm.
because, but in the meantime, I had meeting after meeting, and she'd say, this publisher wants to meet with you, and I'd say, if they want me to pitch something, I don't have
right.
something. No, they just want to meet you. And I'm like, okay, for the sake of setting down roots, maybe I'll do that. But remember, I'm not going to pitch anything.
Right.
We'd go to the meeting. The first thing the publisher would say is, so what's your book?
Right.
And like, you know, I'd be like, hey, what? But this one, when they decided to try Jay at 10 o'clock, right? I said, that's a book no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crazy experiment. And I got to see how that plays out.
That moment, I remember that moment. That's one of my clearest memories. Was after the show, getting called into Jeff Ross's office, and Conan was in there, and they were, you know, Conan was going to take over the Tonight Show the following year, and they were like,
"Yeah,
they just offered Jay the 10 p.m. slot," and it was stunning news. It was not good news. Let's start in the beginning.
Yeah, we just want to give a general overview.
An overview of the war for late night.
What the landscape was like.
Right.
Okay, so Leno is hosting the Tonight Show, and he's number one for years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Solid number one. Conan is at 12:30, growing, getting fantastic reaction, getting on magazine covers. He hosts the Emmy Awards. He kills. He's fantastic. He's a hot property. Other networks want him because that's what happens at the 12:30 show. You're playing the lounge. And you want to go to the main room,
yeah.
Right? That's what happens. And that's what happened with Letterman. CBS took Letterman because his contract was coming up, et cetera. The other networks are aware of Conan, and the Fox network had made a big run at him previously. And at that point, Conan was in his late 30s, and he said, I'm going to hang in for a while. I don't know what's happening. But no one thought Jay would ever walk away voluntarily. And to be fair to him, he was not really that old. I think he was 54, mm-hmm. which is not in late night. I mean, you know, that's younger than I think Colbert is now.
Yeah.
So the situation was, here's Conan really wanting to get the Tonight Show. That's what he wants to. But Jay is there and doing great. Okay. So Jay is, you wouldn't take the number one guy out. You wouldn't do that. So they're faced with this situation where if they renewed Jay for another contract in like, I think we're talking about 2004 at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they renew Jay for his usual contract, 3 years or whatever it was at that point, they're liable to lose Conan because his contract will come up and he'll say, well, there's no end in sight for Jay. So what are we going to do? And they were under enormous pressure not to duplicate the disaster that happened with Letterman and Leno fighting it out previously. And that was like deep in NBC's psyche. Don't let that happen again.
Right.
Don't.
And then that's the only thing they were able to do.
Well, even though, and I've written this many times, the basic math does not change. Two does not go into one.
Mm-hmm.
There's one show and two guys.
Right.
You cannot do that. You can't work that out no matter how hard you try. But they tried. So
you have to pick a lover.
You kind of do. So here they tried. What they tried was, okay, let's renew Jay, but let's give him a 5-year renewal,
mm-hmm.
a really extensive renewal,
mm-hmm.
which basically shows our endorsement of him that he's number one and he's get the biggest renewal ever, whatever. So we give him a 5-year renewal. At the same time, we guarantee Conan will get the job at the end of those 5 years.
Right.
The first thing they do is they go to Conan and they make a deal with Conan. Conan, don't go to another network. Mm-hmm. You stay here. You will get the Tonight Show.
In 5 years. Yeah.
You just have a 5-year waiting period, which for Conan was a big ask, in my opinion, because Conan was as hot as a pistol. Everybody's writing about him and he's doing really well. And they're basically saying, park your career on the side road for 5 years. And then we'll put you back on the highway. Mm-hmm. That was kind of what they said. And normally, talent doesn't do that. You know,
right.
When your career's on fire, you jump. You got to move. And Conan's representatives kind of wanted him to do that. But he wanted the Tonight Show, very much like Letterman and Leno had.
Right.
So he decides to take it. And they make the deal with Conan first before they even bring this up with Jay. They don't even tell Jay that they're going to do this thing to him. And that was unwise because nothing meant more to Leno than doing this show either.
Right.
And, you know, to him, when Jeff Zucker finally shows up in his dungeon-like room after the Tonight Show one night to tell him, well, we've made this deal with Conan. We're going to renew you for 5 more years. We've made this deal with Conan. Jay thinks he's being fired.
Right.
You know, it's 5 years,
yeah.
But then you're getting fired, buddy.
Right.
That's in the back of his head. Mm-hmm. And he's like, why would you fire me? I have done nothing but make money for you. But he's such a corporate loyal soldier. He doesn't say much. It just sinks into his soul and burns there.
It's a long time to be a lame duck.
Right.
Long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also he had gone through that bruising experience of the whole Carson succession.
Mm-hmm.
He had, and at that point, he knew that they were courting Letterman to take his job after he'd been on the air for a year in The Tonight Show. He knew that had happened to him before. So, yeah, he was upset, and he decided to lay low for a while. But it was clearly festering in him for that period of time. He came on the air that night and said, you know, yes, this is the thing, and I'm gonna have 5 more years in this, and then we'll give it to Conan. And that's the way it is. So good going, Conan, and we'll see you in 5 years, or whatever he said on the air.
Right.
It being the good soldier. And meanwhile, behind the scenes, with his really great producer, Debbie Vickers, he is, tearing his heart out over this. That makes him more adamant to beat the crap out of Letterman and be number one.
Sure.
so it will look like a bad, very bad decision for NBC. So that's what was the spark that set this up, because they had this 5-year period where Conan's doing his great show. He's continuing to do his show, but he's still in the lounge. He hasn't gone up to the main room yet. And Letterman is continuing to kick ass and take ratings. So you get to that period where it's going to be now time for Conan to take over. And now Jay is on the market. Jay will be on the market, right? Because he is going to leave his job at the end of the 5 years.
Now that they're getting closer to 2009,
they're getting the closer. Transition. So in that last year before the transition,
mm-hmm.
he is chased. Now he gets chased. Fox comes after him, and he doesn't think he really belongs at Fox, which is correct. But then ABC goes real big. Bob Iger himself turns up at Jay Leno's door with a deal for him to get an 11:30 show. Jimmy Kimmel at that point was at 12:05 after a half hour Nightline. Okay. So they have to get Kimmel to agree to go to 12:30 if Jay comes at 11:30. So Jake starts to court Jimmy Kimmel, which was bizarre because Kimmel had just eviscerated him on the air usually, but he does. And he basically tells Kimmel, listen, I won't be doing it that long. You're much younger than me. You know, you go back to 12:30. I go to 11:30 and we dominate together. And Kimmel basically agrees. He's like, you know, I'm after Nightline now, which is a bad lead in for me. I'll probably be much more solid if Leno has the show. So against his nature, which was that he thought Jay was kind of a hack. That's what he thought. He decides he's okay with that. So they have a very significant situation that ABC will take Jay Leno. And NBC, of course, hears all this and knows this is going on. And they now start to panic because they're like, well, we're going to give the show to Conan, but now Jay is going to be our competition at 11:30.
Right.
You know, and then we have to find a 12:30. So we could really be in the soup here if this doesn't work out, you know, with Conan, even though as a network that was dedicated to appealing to the demo, Conan was the right play for that because his audience was so much younger. Mm-hmm. The median age for Conan's audience was so much younger than Letterman and Leno, mm-hmm. that it made sense for NBC to have him as a host. But they were afraid because they thought Leno will get very big numbers. And The Tonight Show isn't supposed to just win the demo. It's supposed to be the show. It's supposed to be the franchise,
right?
The dominant show. And so that's in their head. And they're sweating this out and they don't know what to do. And Jeff Zucker goes to Jay with the usual pitches, the same kind of pitches that NBC made to Letterman to try to keep him. They make to Jay to kind of, we'll give you primetime specials. We'll give you, they offered him an 8 o'clock half hour show 5 nights a week. That was their first idea, 8 p.m. And Jay's like, I don't think that's right for me. That's not right for me. And he basically held the cards here because they were stuck. They didn't want to have to face, they thought they'd lose to Letterman. I mean, to Letterman and Leno at first, with Cohen, because they said it's going to be a transition, et cetera. Will Idol be in third place? So then Jeff Zucker came, who, I don't know anyone else who's really emphasized this, but the idea of putting Jay at a strip at 10 o'clock was not the first time Zucker thought of that. Because in a previous moment when Letterman's contract was coming up, he pitched that to the Letterman people.
Oh.
Come to NBC and I'll give you a 10 o'clock show. He had pitched that previously.
Oh, wow. How'd that go?
Well, obviously, both Letterman and Leno had the same reaction, which is like,
right.
I don't belong in primetime. I'm a late night guy. And
right.
There's something about this kind of show that really belongs in late night, not at 10 o'clock. But when presented with the possibility, Leno finally starts to say, well, I can stay where I am. I don't have to leave my studio. I can keep the same staff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the people with NBC contracts can stay. He didn't really want to go to another network and start over. He did not want to do that. So he sort of reluctantly goes along with this. And the situation is now reversed because...
Wow.
They're like, it's much different this time.
Let's get both guys really, really angry and then see what happens.
Yeah. Interestingly, because of my connections with all this, I get word that they're giving Jay this 10 o'clock show.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, like we wanted to give you advance notice because we know you're writing a book.
I'm about to break this.
Yeah.
So I called Jeff Ross.
Our executive producer, yeah.
Jeff Ross.
And I'm like, do you guys know they're getting a 10 o'clock show? And he's like, we just found out. This is a terrible idea, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so I had confirmation. I put it up online. We had entered the digital era by
right.
then. So I broke that story. Jay Leno's getting a 10 o'clock show. And the instant reaction sort of across the board was actually, wow, NBC's figured out a way to keep both guys. And I think because Jay had kind of defied the expectations of certain insiders and the smart money in television by beating Letterman, there was a feeling like, well, you shouldn't write him off,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Anything could happen. This might work.
Yeah.
Who knows?
This might work.
It's certainly never been done before, so it was unprecedented.
And economically, it was a fantastic idea if it worked, because five primetime shows, you know, hour-long cop shows at 10 o'clock, way more expensive than a five-night strip of a late-night show.
Right.
Way, way more expensive.
Yeah.
So economically, sounds good, makes sense. And I just knew that from Conan's point of view, when I talked to him about it subsequently, this was just, felt like a slap in the face because, you know, he had followed Leno for right. all those years and he was still going to follow Leno.
Yeah.
That's the way it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was literally just moving everything up an hour. So
yeah.
In a sense, nothing was changing.
We've rearranged time.
Right.
Exactly. So that catches us up, Jesse.
Yes.
Right?
Thank you.
Where Bill's like, I have a book.
Read the frickin' book.
Is, you're right, Mike. The book is, well, what happens now?
Right.
You know, Jay is getting this crazy experiment and Conan's taking over the Tonight Show. What happens?
Right.
And in my gut, I was like, I don't think it's going to work.
Right.
Something's going to go wrong here.
Yeah.
And that, because I hate to say it, that makes the book better.
Sure.
I mean, if it works and everybody's happy.
My theory is you were the mastermind behind all of this because you were getting pressured to write a book.
Well,
and
yes.
So you
puppeteered it.
You moved all these chess pieces. So congratulations to you.
Well, I was going to ask, maybe Bill, could you speak a little bit to why you think The Tonight Show as a franchise was so important to people? I mean, why was it worth Conan putting other things on hold for? And it seems like this was the precious that everyone was fighting over.
You know, Conan himself said, you know, he grew up, was a really young kid watching The Tonight Show with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this, they bonded over it. And there was something about Johnny Carson's Tonight Show that really got into the culture.
Mm-hmm.
That was like where show business met to discuss what was going on in the world and in show business. And everybody went there. Everybody was on the show. Nobody could compete with Johnny. He had this unique voice. When he said something was going on in the world with the Vietnam War or whatever, it had real impact.
Mm-hmm.
So When I say the franchise, I mean it was the, it's hard to compare it to something else, but like the New York Yankees right. or something. Mm-hmm. It was like the franchise that if you wanted to be in late night, that's the place where you're at the top. You're at the top if you're on the Tonight Show.
And another example of its power is like all the stories of stand-up comics who would make their debut on that show.
Yeah.
Perfect example.
Kill and literally be famous.
Blow up.
By Monday. They appeared on Friday, mm-hmm. like Roseanne, famous by Monday.
Freddie Prinze is the most famous example. He got a deal like the following Monday for a sitcom.
Yeah. Right.
You know, Mike, I did a podcast last year when I did this series for CNN about the history of late night.
Right,
and
right.
one of the things I did was talk to comics who got their first shot on The Tonight Show. And their stories are amazing because right. yeah. it was so important. It was terrifying.
Right.
It was terrifying. George Lopez told me he's in his dressing room and his hands froze up. He couldn't move his hands suddenly.
Wow.
They froze. Another guy told me that he was so scared when he came out, he thought if he didn't do well, the floor would open up and he'd be sucked into oblivion.
Sure.
Oh, man.
Ray Romano said, it was like jumping out of an airplane. Mm-hmm. You jumped out and you could never go back. You would never, ever be able to go back. Once you did that, it was all on the line.
Right.
You either made it or mm-hmm. you fell to the ground and that was it. That was it.
Right. It was high stakes. It was incredibly high stakes.
Yeah, you couldn't be like, well, maybe nobody saw it. Right, it was on pretty late. Yeah.
No, that was because you wouldn't be invited back. And once you weren't invited back,
right.
it was over. But if Johnny Carson went like this, which he did.
Mm-hmm. Give the okay sign, yeah.
If he liked it, and especially if he brought you over.
Right.
If you came to the couch,
if you walked to the couch, you basically had a career. That was it.
Development deal,
So that's where Conan was when he made the deal, to park his career for 5 years because it was worth it to him to have a shot at the throne. That was the throne. They called Johnny the king. Mm-hmm. So the chair behind the desk was the late night throne. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I know Conan didn't want to get, like he was getting wooed by Fox but all those networks wanted him to go on at 11 p.m. And
yes,
there was no.
Which would be an advantage, but yes.
But at the time, 11 p.m. was considered like it never worked.
Right.
And it wasn't going to work. And I think that was another big deterrent.
Well, to be fair, it started to work for Stewart around that time, but. It started to work for Jon Stewart.
But going to Fox.
But it was a half-hour show and a different format and all that. It was different, yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it hadn't worked at Fox, and they were the main pursuer. So
no, exactly.
Yes. And also, there was something to like, you know what? I've had such success here at this network.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of loyalty.
I think that's another thing. Because Conan was very, very loyal, especially to Bob Wright, who was fantastic to him.
Yes.
Because everybody forgets that Conan really struggled when he started. And was very close to being canceled.
Yeah.
When he started. And Bob Wright stood up for him.
He stuck by him. And he was the head of NBC, so that helped.
Loyalty is dismissed a lot in show business.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's still something to it. And for a guy who's a decent guy, and there aren't that many decent guys in show business. But,
right, right.
Conan is a decent guy. And I think he felt... Bob Wright went to his wedding, for heaven's sake.
Right, right.
You know, so...
Yeah, no, it's... I mean, that... That is like kind of what the story that unfolds after this. It is kind of like executives forgetting the human aspect almost and like looking at things as widgets. And it's like, well, we still have these two widgets,
right.
Jay and Conan.
Well, that is kind of what happened. It was kind of like pieces, the things kids put together.
Legos.
Lego pieces. You know,
yeah.
If we put this Lego piece here,
right.
we still have some. We're still making some.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
they said, Jay, here's this 10 o'clock show.
Right.
And Conan, you're doing the Tonight Show. And then.
And Sweeney, you said you knew at that point that was kind of like a, ooh.
Well.
That was not a good announcement.
I mean, the whole 5-year plan was that.
Yeah.
That all seemed unprecedented, like almost antithetical to showbiz, where. There's kind of, you know, a surprise coming or, you know, the entertainment is supposed to be new and exciting.
Yes.
And just this wait for a transition, it sounded almost like a very corporate decision.
Yeah.
Almost antithetical to showbiz.
Like we're going to phase this person out and phase this one in.
Right, yeah. Right, right. Yeah. So my son's taking over the practice in 5 years. And right. so, but then, and yeah, the 10 p.m., I'm very skeptical that that would work.
Okay, so I want to tell a little story about that, because 10 p.m. is announced, and people wonder how it's going to work. And NBC has this idea of how to promote it at the upfront, where they sell advertising
right.
for the season to people.
Right.
And they decide to do a night of 1,000 laughs, or whatever they called it.
Right.
And they're going to do a show in New York for the advertisers,
right.
the big advertisers, the buyers, to come to the Town Hall Theater, and they're going to have all these NBC-associated comedy people come out and do comedy.
Right.
That included, like, Jerry Seinfeld, Conan. Conan delayed going to L.A. to start to do some planning for his Tonight Show
right.
because it was important that he come out. And Leno was going to be the closing act.
Right.
Leno came to New York and was going to be the closing act, which they timed so he would come out on the stage exactly at 10 p.m.
Oh.
So that was going to be part of the shtick.
Right.
And Conan came out, I think, first or almost first, because he had to fly to L.A.,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a tremendous laugh because he said, I really wanted to do this because it's the first time I'll ever be on before Leno.
Right.
And he got a huge laugh. And he was funny, and Seinfeld was funny, and Jimmy Fallon, who had been announced to get Conan's spot, right?
Right.
At 12:30, he was very funny.
To take over late night.
So it was great. It was great. We're all sitting there. Everybody's enjoying themselves.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? And then they introduced Jay. And, you know, Jay has a reputation of being one of the great stand-ups of all time. He is just a guy who's always had an act that plays with broad audiences. But he's never been especially effective in New York, to be honest. So he's in front of a New York audience. And something that everyone else had done was do some material that was related to what was going on. Something about this plan to put Jay at 10
right.
or introduce Conan, or there was always something like that.
Deal with the reality of the situation. Of yeah. that
why
night.
Everybody was there. Right,
right, exactly.
But Jay comes out and he starts telling jokes about his wife losing her cat and stuff. You know, he's doing his act, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
He's doing his act.
His road act.
It's like it's a Vegas gig, kind of. Right. Like, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah.
And he starts out and he's not doing particularly well. He's not getting big laughs. You know, he's getting polite laughter.
Right.
And I don't know how long he was supposed to do, maybe 20 minutes.
Right.
But after about 5 or 10, he kind of realizes this isn't going great. So he switches to a different file in his brain.
Right.
And he does something about, you know, commercials or I don't know
right.
what the next theme was.
He's reaching around in his joke bag.
And that doesn't work. And their plan to put him on a 10 is, you see the flaw, because people start looking at their watches. You know, it's getting a little late.
Right, 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 right.
And he gets to his 20-minute mark. And an ABC executive is sitting in the audience, and he's friendly with, I forget which NBC executive, but he texts him, and he texts, what's wrong with Jay? He's really off, right?
Right.
And maybe 5 or 10 minutes later, he sends another text which says, make it stop.
Oh, boy. Give him the light.
And Jay, who never, he had done an interview with the press before he did this. We went into his hotel room, like 8 of us.
Right.
And somebody asked him, what do you do if you perform and you start to flop? And he says, you know, after you've been in this a long time, you don't flop anymore.
Right.
You figure out a way. You just don't flop anymore. Well, he was flopping.
Oh boy.
He was flopping and he was sweating and it was too long. And he read the room completely wrong. Did no material about the fact that he was going to be on at 10 o'clock.
Right.
None, nothing.
Yeah.
And people start to leave.
Oh boy.
They start to get up and leave. And the theater is an old New York theater, run down
right.
theater, and the chairs squeak when you get up.
Oh, oh my God.
So you hear all this, and people are leaving. So it winds up being a PR kind of disaster for them.
Yeah.
That they set this whole thing up to show Jay off at 10 o'clock. And for the first time in years, he does poorly. He does absolutely poorly. And the next day, NBC has a meeting, and some of the people are really sweating about it. Most of them are like, this isn't going to impact his TV audience at all. It's not going to be
right. An insider upfront crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But it still played like an omen.
Yeah.
And I sat there thinking, boy, that was what the worst thing that could have happened to NBC tonight was that.
Right.
You know, and the last thing I thought would happen. The last thing, I remember Jeff Ross telling me he'd seen Jay some months earlier at some other NBC thing. He said he killed like crazy
right.
in the room. He killed like crazy.
I was at that event.
Because that was like affiliate managers, you know, guys from around the country. You were at that event, right? And he killed, right?
Mm. I was at Town Hall that night with Conan.
Yeah.
We left right away.
You left, you didn't know. So you found out later that Jay had bombed, right?
We just heard it. We didn't hear that he bombed. It was just that, you know, it was kind of rough sledding.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Well, he bombed. There's just okay. no other word for it. I mean, let's face it. That was a bomb. When people are walking out on you
right.
and you're the big shot guy, that's bad.
So did you write about that right away or yeah. were you just?
Oh, that, of course. Okay. I wrote about it that day in the newspaper. Of course I wrote about that. I didn't go into the I didn't know the detail about make it stop and all that.
Right. Know,
I didn't
right,
know
right.
all the stuff that went on and backstage, what was going on. I didn't, right. I didn't know about that because there was all kinds of other stuff going on, like with Seinfeld behind backstage and all that. But I wrote, you know, they did this thing and Leno did not to do well. I mean, I'm not a critic, so I wasn't going to say.
Right.
But I did say, you know, it got late and people were leaving.
Oh.
I believe I wrote that.
Just so. The facts.
Did Jay call you and go, come on?
No, he didn't. But I have to say about Jay called me a lot. Mm. He did call me a lot. And there was a period of time where when he was doing well, he called me every day.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And he tried monologue jokes on me.
Really?
Oh, man. Did you ever pitch anything, Bill? Be honest.
Never.
Okay.
I'm not stupid. I don't fool with comics. You don't fool with comics, right? But the only ones he would tell me were the ones he thought were a little maybe this is too edgy.
Right.
Like some Michael Jackson pedophilia joke right. or something, right? And I said, Jay, there's nothing you can tell me that will offend me.
Right.
I'm unoffendable.
Right.
So I'm maybe the wrong audience for this, right? And it was difficult because I couldn't then say to him, I'm not offended, but it ain't funny. You're like, so I just give him polite laughter. And it really was pro forma. He just wanted to sort of gossip.
Right, right, right.
A little bit about.
Oh, man.
But
this
we had
is
a
great.
Good we had a good relationship. I'm not criticizing Jay. I mean, we had a good relationship. And he did do that for a while. He'd sort of say, what do you hear about what's going on with Dave? And Dave was Dave was in his head like a gremlin, you know?
Right.
He could never get Dave out of his head, you know? And so that was part of it. And so as years went by, he stopped doing that.
Yeah, you were like, I don't have time to talk every day.
Yeah, I have to write an article.
Before he did the 10 o'clock show,
yeah.
I went out to interview him, right? Uh-huh. And we sat on the set. And if you remember, he did a bit called 10 at 10, 10 questions at 10 p.m. That was one of his segments, right?
Right.
So he said, well, you sit in the chair, I'll do this with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he asked me 10 questions.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm like, I don't have interesting stuff that the show business people be interested in at all. You know, like, who was your toughest interview? That kind of, you know, that kind
right,
of thing.
Right, right.
But I was like, this isn't good because Jay's not really an interviewer and... The segment felt off to me,
mm-hmm.
even with me in it. But
right.
but I was just I just had a good relationship with Jay, and
right.
you know I could call him and say, is this true? Is this going on?
Right.
You know, and he would tell me, and I knew that he was when the 10 o'clock show started to tank. I knew how painful what the pain he was in for sure.
Yeah.
From a press perspective, how was it going for Conan when the Tonight Show first premiered?
The expectations were good.
Yeah.
That people thought they'd seen him do like so many great things. Even if they didn't see his show that much, they'd seen him do the Emmys, like I said, and he had won people over. Doubters had backed off. Yes, he's a different sort of act, but that's what's good about him.
Yeah.
Like that was finally people said, oh yeah, well that I like that he's not doing. So there were expectations that he would come out and do a new version of The Tonight Show and it'd be fresh and different. So I went out for the first show. I didn't sit in the audience, but I was out there and I talked to him and Jeff. And I remember I watched the show in a bar at the hotel that night. And because it was the first show, people started to watch it and they enjoyed it. I mean, it was, you know, there was no question they enjoyed it. So I think there was a feeling that this would be fine. That'd be, I mean, remember, Jay did not come on first. Conan came on before the 10 o'clock thing. He got, I don't know how many months head start.
Couple of months, maybe a couple of months.
Yeah.
Of just Conan doing the Tonight Show before
of just
Jay
Conan doing the Tonight
Show. Did 10.
But I think it was obvious to me early on that Conan in the Tonight Show in L.A. was different from Conan in New York.
Mm. Right.
There was a somewhat different feel to it.
Right.
Which is which is completely logical.
Yeah.
I mean, L.A. audiences are different. They're more hepped up. You know.
Well, and the space was different. You've talked about that before, Sweeney.
And the space.
Too. Yeah. We would go out. The first time we went out there, they were taking, I think it was Studio One. They had gutted it and they chalked out on the floor where the seats would be, where the desk would be. And our first reaction was, oh, this is a big space. And
it's like an airplane hangar.
Right. And I mean, one thing for comedy and especially on TV, no viewer cares how big your theater is. That's not impressing anyone. And for comedy, I think the smaller and more intimate the space on television and at a nightclub, the better that you kind of get that compression.
There's no question about that.
So that was my first worry.
In fact, Mike, every person who came to like Tonight Show in New York right. for the first time, or especially Letterman's old studio right. for the first time, they would say, God, it's so small.
It's so mm-hmm. small.
I didn't realize how small it is. It right. feels bigger when you watch it on TV.
Yeah.
Always.
So the smallness of it plays very well.
Yes.
You know, it in the room, you feel that the small, and then on TV, it doesn't really look so small. But
also, TV is such an intimate medium. And so the smaller the space you're performing to, I think it allows all the performers to reach that intimacy
Absolutely.
With the live crowd. And then that mm-hmm. translates to television. Mm-hmm. If you're coming out into a barn where there's 400 people, it's just a different energy. And I think you're going to maybe the tendency, at least initially, is to play bigger, maybe.
Absolutely. No doubt. Mm-hmm. How can you not?
Yeah.
How can you not?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no logic to doing it that way, but
I felt the same way. I felt that mm-hmm. that there was a cavernous feel
yeah.
to the space.
Yeah.
It not only was harder to, it was just different from what Conan had been doing.
Yes.
So the difference felt immediate. Like, okay, right. he's still Conan.
Right.
He's still incredibly funny, but there's something about the atmosphere that's different. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know?
But on the plus side, I will say, like, whenever we travel the show for a week during the aughts,
yes,
go to Chicago or San Francisco, the fans that were able to come and see Conan live that lived locally were crazy, so crazily enthusiastic. It was like an elevation from the New York crowds.
Yep.
And it felt that way in L.A. initially.
Yeah. Oh no, the crowds yeah. are fantastic.
Crowds are great.
No, I remember them lining up and all that. It was great. But there was that feeling like, okay, Conan has to find his footing in this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
Okay. He is who he is.
Right.
And you know, you had NBC people telling, you gotta change.
Right.
You gotta do something different. Mm-hmm. This is the Tonight Show. You got to do something different.
Yeah, how are you going to revolutionize it?
Right.
Well, they wanted him to do something different and more traditional.
Oh,
they
I
wanted
see.
Him to broaden.
Yeah,
they wanted
yeah.
him to broaden his himself.
Right.
Constantly saying, "Don't do that crazy string dance crap," you know, or whatever. Right.
That was us saying that.
Okay.
I'm joking.
You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
That
yes.
They
of course.
Wanted. They didn't want his idiosyncrasies
right.
so much as they wanted. More jokes in the monologue, you know, more that do that traditional Tonight Show thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. More jokes about the news. Ask what's going on in the news. Right. Which wasn't Conan's forte. Really. He hadn't been doing a hell of a lot of that.
Right.
So,
but we definitely were adding jokes to the monologue as we
got
close. So, that was,
and he got better. He did his own monologue performance.
Right.
Definitely improved right. for sure. For absolute sure. Even before he went, because you guys would go from four jokes to eight to whatever.
Right.
And he was obviously getting his footing there.
Right.
But I just felt like, okay, we got to get back into the mode of, okay, he's going to find it. It's going to take a little time.
Yes.
And for him to find the exact groove he had before. And stop telling him to do something that isn't in his nature. I thought that was foolish.
Well, yes, that advice was kind of broad in general. So I mean, it was literally like phrase you just used, like have a broader
yes.
appeal. And I mean, our mission in our heads was, well, first of all, it's Conan. And so you just don't change how you're funny or how, what kind of stuff you're doing. We came up with new things and because we like coming up with new stuff and think that's right. more creative, mm-hmm. but our bottom line was, is it funny? Is it making us laugh? And that, I think that that's always kind of the, should be the guiding principle, because otherwise where are you?
Of course.
And so, yes, we thought, okay, this show, the shows are doing well, the crowds are enjoying them, and we're just going to keep building. And we thought we had a lot of, we thought we had time. To build.
Well, here's the thing. They immediately thought to themselves, we got this guy. He has a tremendous median age, young viewers, right. et cetera. The rest of late night can't compare.
Right.
And they couldn't resist saying, but we want him to have more viewers than as well. He right. better beat Letterman. He better beat Letterman in viewers too. Mm-hmm. And with Jay out of the picture at 11:30,
right.
that leaves some of his more traditional viewers
right.
said, I think I'll watch Letterman.
Right.
Because Conan feels a little young and maybe not my style. So you have this some audience gravitation over to Dave, and Dave starts to get into first place in viewers while Conan's dominating in the demos, which is
the younger viewers.
In prime time, that's all NBC ever cared about.
Right.
They didn't yeah. give a damn if you know CSI had 30 million viewers if they could beat it in the demo. They didn't care about that.
Right.
But the Tonight Show not quote unquote winning was bothering them. It was bothering them, and you could feel, you could sense that that was something they were worried about, that somehow it would look like the move wasn't smart because they're not quote unquote winning. You know, and of course, if you're CBS, that's what you promote. Oh, Dave right. is winning because he's got more viewers. So I think that was a factor.
And then that story, a lot of people just like, sometimes with the news, it's a zero-sum game. So that saying, oh, overall numbers, that person's winning
yep.
versus like more important numbers that determine
money,
yeah. exactly,
yeah.
which is also winning.
Yes.
But that's not easy to spoon feed to the public, you know?
But I should ask you something, Mike, because I think in Conan's first week, you had a lot of bits that you had taped,
right?
And he did a bit which was hilarious, okay? Fantastic bit, where he disguised himself as a person doing a market research.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's a great one.
And the market research was with older viewers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they showed tapes of Conan from his old show
right.
and asked these older viewers who weren't regular viewers of Conan
right.
what they thought of Conan. And you got responses like, I think that guy's mentally ill.
It was great.
And he was in disguise in the room.
He's in disguise.
He was totally disguised. Big,
as an older,
puffy cheeks
heavy over. Man.
Right.
Named Stuart Wexler.
And you know what, Mike? It killed. I thought it killed. I thought yeah. it was funny.
Well, and Conan would egg them on. He's like,
yes.
he's yeah. like, he would be like, someone would say you were saying, he's like, thank you. You know, I'm not supposed to give my own opinion, but I have to right. agree. This guy,
agree. There's something wrong with this guy.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
But Mike, I'm sitting watching it, thinking to myself, this isn't far off from what's happening. You know,
right.
because
too real.
There were some viewers, they just weren't going to get Conan. Conan
right.
is different. That's why he's good. But, you know, people are going to say, I'm used to that, you know,
right.
20 joke monologue, and then a very formal comedy bit at the desk, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like, you know, and then you bring on, you know, Don Rickles or somebody.
Right.
You know, you bring on, you know, that's what you do. And instead, Conan has younger, hotter acts and Will Ferrell and people like this.
Right.
And they're doing wacky stuff and they're doing crazy stuff.
Right.
And it's like that audience research group who are like, he makes me uncomfortable.
Right.
So in the back of my head, and of course, I'm thinking bookwise.
At the time, yeah.
I'm thinking bookwise. I hope this isn't also an omen for Conan, that he's done a bit that shows what NBC's complaining about.
Interesting. Well, that, I mean, to us, we were just like, this is hilarious.
It was hilarious, no doubt.
So,
no doubt.
You know, we just thought as long as we were being funny,
of course,
that would win out in the end. So
I'm not saying you did something wrong. It just resonated with me that was sort of what was right? what was going on. And of course, it played into Conan's self-deprecation.
Yes.
You know, like, yeah. Look at this guy. He's awful. He's crazy. Look at that red hair.
Right.
I mean, you know, and that's. That was great as a viewer who likes Conan. I loved it.
But as an executive, like, because they probably were running focus groups and maybe...
These are Leno's viewers.
Yes.
Those people were Leno's viewers. That's what I thought. Anyway.
Well, and you're right. I mean, it's kind of people, first of all, don't like change, but also just the nature of why people watched late night at that time. A lot of it was kind of to like ease yourself into bed. You know, it was...
Right.
This is what I'm going to do right before I fall asleep. And Conan's almost too stimulating in that way.
Well, that's an interesting thing. And obviously that goes back to the fact that Tonight Show started. It was 90 minutes long. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The last half hour was like full of authors.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
who were maybe on to help people go to sleep.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like that was their, you know. And if you go back and you watch one of those shows, you're like, holy cow, is this dull.
Yeah.
The last part of the show is so dull. But Letterman changed that because Letterman was on after.
Right.
After Carson. And he was incredibly stimulating, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
He was doing just amazing, unbelievable, fresh stuff no one had ever done. Yeah. So it wasn't like that was something people now would expect at 11:30 that you're not supposed to be stimulated and Conan wouldn't fit.
Right.
I just felt like they thought the personality that Conan has, which is, you know, he's a big funny kid kind of personality, was just not what they were used to. And again, my basic thought was give it time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Give it time.
Yeah, that was all.
When he first came on, he was so unpolished when he first came on at 12:30. I'm sure people are like, what are they doing giving this show to this guy? You know?
Right.
And you just say, okay, there's a few sparks every night. Every night it wouldn't be a great show, but there'd be like two or three things you're like, wow, that I've not seen. That is funny. Mm-hmm. And that's what I thought would happen. It would just slowly progress.
Right.
And the older people would maybe gravitate to Letterman, but slowly the NBC franchise would take over.
Right.
NBC, unfortunately, was not doing well in primetime at the time. So he wasn't getting help there either.
Right.
But I thought all of these things are cyclical. You drop a guy in, you believe in his talent,
and then
it plays out that way.
Right. So what happened instead?
Yeah.
Bill.
When it comes to scents, you should pick ones that smell like, well, you. Target gets it, which is why they offer a range of personal care products with fragrances for everyone. Be true to floral you with Dove Peony and Rose Body Wash. Live your fresh life with Degree Ultra Clear Deodorant. Express your decadent side with Love Beauty and Planet Coconut Shampoo. This spring, choose care that brings you joy beyond labels. Pick up new favorites at a Target near you or online at Target.com.
Start clean with Clorox because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I need the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
what happened instead is Jay comes on.
Right.
Okay, so it's 3 months later, Jay comes on. And even Jeff Ross would say to me, you know, at some point we're like, you know, maybe Jay will be helpful if he hits. He gets some attention early.
Right.
And that'll help us. Uh-huh. Although Conan always said the weird thing is we have a newscast in between us.
That's right.
Right, the local news.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Jay comes on and he's almost immediately a disaster. Almost immediately, it's wrong. And it logically, I wasn't sure why this would be, because he's doing the same show. I mean, he had a few new segments, all of which were bad ideas. They didn't have good comedy ideas.
Right.
But his regular stuff, he still did. He still did his headlines. He still did that stuff.
Yeah.
Except it didn't feel right. It felt off. And his own performance felt off like it did back in the town hall.
Right.
There was just something off about it from the start.
I'm sure he, on some level, hated doing it.
I think you're right. I think on some level, it was like, why am I having to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not on the Tonight Show?
Right, right.
Why is this now me being exposed in a way, because he was being exposed in a way, as not a primetime performer.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a primetime performer. And then now I'm out here proving it.
And I think as people's viewing habits, I really think they're like, well, wait, no, we can't watch monologue jokes at 10 p.m.
I need a procedural.
Well, I mean, you built people's expectations up for, you know, 70 years.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then say, we're going to absolutely throw this in.
Right.
You know, if Jay had been on once a week, right? That would have been fine. I think that would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
But he's on every night. Every night you got to watch that.
Right.
And you're already saying, oh, no, I this is what I do until 11:30. And then I watch a late night show.
Exactly. Like, yes.
The chemistry was off. The chemistry was just wrong.
Right.
And I don't think Letterman could have done it either. I mean, even when they were going to hire, I think it would have been awkward as heck for him. And he knew it. He knew it would be awkward.
In a way, it was kind of like a variety show, somewhat.
And, of course.
And that template had died on the vine, I feel like, 15 years, but like by the early 80s.
If you don't have Charo, there's no point.
It had died on the vine. It had died on the vine 15 to 20 years earlier, and now they were putting it on every night.
Yeah.
So really, really a bad idea.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I kept saying, but here's NBC saying, we can't allow the same disaster to happen.
Yeah.
So we have to come up with something else. And they dug in deep to try to figure it out. And this...
When you say same disaster, you're referring back to, again, the whole Carson.
The whole succession of Carson.
Exactly.
That got in the DNA at NBC.
Right.
Don't do that again.
Right.
Just don't do that again. They had two big stars there with Letterman and Leno. And they created this hostility and friction and they had two great franchises.
Right.
It was so bad for their their corporate strategy, et cetera. I just think it infected the place.
Right.
Whatever we do not let that happen again. But there's a certain Sisyphus thing to this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to get it up the hill this time.
Right.
Yeah.
And this time it won't fall down on us. But it is going to anyway.
Or when you're telling yourself, don't bring up that one thing, you know, in a meeting, and then that's the only thing you could talk about.
Yeah. It'll also be pointed out that the news is coming on after Jay, and there's nothing more important to the local television station, at least then. I don't know what's going on with local TV now, but then their late night news. That's where they make all their money.
Right.
All their money. So here's Jay 5 nights a week with a crappy lead-in to the late night news. And if you'd watched Jay's show and you didn't really particularly like it, why would you say, now I'll watch another one of those?
Right. Yes.
I mean, it really was a mess. And I'm not saying I could have come up with a better strategy, because I don't think there is one.
Right.
There isn't one. Clearly, the ball's going to roll down on you.
Right.
There's no other strategy.
Right.
But this one set up both guys to fail.
Yeah.
Is what it did. It set them up both to fail because... The affiliates immediately start saying, you got to change this. We can't have 5 nights a week of this terrible lead-in. It's killing us.
Right. Right.
And they're also saying, we're losing a little at 11:30 too. Well, Jay was doing better. So we're getting hit in both sides and they are in revolt. One of the things that I really covered in the book was the station lineup of NBC was pressing them to make a change.
Oh,
all the local affiliates.
They were like, do something.
You're killing
do
us.
Do something. You can't. You're killing us.
Yeah.
We're getting hit on both sides because, you know, the big Leno audience would tune in a little, or even if they hadn't seen the news, they might tune in a little early. So they had some benefit and they were getting nothing but loss out of it.
Right.
And they made a lot of noise. They made a lot of noise, particularly because NBC couldn't come back to them and say, yeah, well, we got Seinfeld. No, Seinfeld wasn't on the air anymore.
Right.
NBC was not strong. They weren't able to say, you can't abandon us.
Right.
You know, we have all these things. You're like, instead, these affiliates were saying, you know what, we're going to take Leno off. And we're going to put on, an hour long of a show we bought, like Law and Order.
Right.
Because we get all the ad revenue from that.
Or move our news up earlier.
We'll move our news up earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll put in a movie.
Right.
And we'll do news and then we'll do a 2-hour movie and we'll knock out the Tonight Show too. I mean, all of that was being thrown up in the air at NBC.
Yeah. It just kept getting ratcheted up and up. And it really was becoming like animals thrown in a sack and then thrown in the river. It was, you know, there's just no,
yeah.
I don't think the executives saw, like, their bottom line was, how do we still keep these two guys? Which at this point, it was just absurd.
It was an absurdity. It was time to make a call.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you think Conan is the future, that's your call, right?
Right.
That's what you decided 5 years ago.
Right.
Conan is a future.
Right.
Jay is coming at some point to his sell-by date, right?
Right.
So try to extend it, but it's not working, and it's time to go. However, I should point one thing out. Because Jay was so reluctant to take this show and had the leverage of a potential ABC show, he made a deal that no one I know of has ever made in the history of television. You know what a pay or play deal is, right?
Can you explain what that is?
Tell us, just for the audience.
And me.
Okay, so a pay or play deal is...
And me.
I make a deal to be, let's say, your late night host for a year.
Okay.
And after 3 months, you fire me, okay?
Right.
But you got to pay me. You got to pay me off because you've made a deal. You made a contract. You got to pay me, okay. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to play the show anymore because it's failing.
So that's pay or play.
Or play.
I got it.
Jay got a deal, pay and play.
Okay.
Oh.
His deal said, no, you can't take me off.
Oh.
You have to keep me on.
Oh.
That is,
I never heard of such
as far as I know,
thing.
Had never, ever heard of such
wow,
a deal.
What?
It's just an ironclad contract.
It was, exactly.
I would think even the performer wouldn't want that. Like, if no one else wants you
well,
around.
Exactly. You're exactly right, Mike. And that's what Jay thought.
Yeah.
That, you know, all I'm getting is pilloried for doing this. I can't just stay on. So
pilloried for the 10 p.m. show.
Yes, he's getting tomatoes from everybody, right?
Right.
His lawyer, looking at this, says, you know what, Jay? They can't just pay you off. They can't just pay you off because they've made this deal. So you have to get a new compensation of extraordinary amounts.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that he could literally say, you can't take me off. You made a deal. You can't take. So now they're faced with a gargantuan payout.
Wow.
If that's what they're going
to
force.
Mm.
And for Jay, that made some, you know, I guess some sense. He all he wanted was out at that point. He knew,
right.
Like it was over. And he thought, give me a deal to let me out and I'll make a deal somewhere else for late night. That's precisely what he wanted, you know?
Right.
And NBC's still in a position like, well, we don't want that.
Right.
We don't want. So crazy, absolutely crazy situation. And they're like, well, what else can we do? And this is where we get to the moment where they decide, we'll give Jay a half hour show at 11:30. And we'll move Conan not to 12, but to 12:05, remember, because the late night news goes to 11:35.
Yeah.
So it'll be 12:05. And Jimmy Fallon will be on, you know, with the drunks and the coming out of the bar. He would be on at 1:30.
Oh, my God.
1:35. Yeah. That,
sounds like win-win to me.
He was new enough. Jimmy was new enough
right.
that he was like, whatever. I just want to stay right. on. Right. So they didn't have to worry about him. They got him and Lorne Michaels to agree because Lorne Michaels was producing the show.
Right.
Then they go to Jay and they say, and Jay is anticipating this meeting where they're going to say, you're canceled.
Right.
Right. The show, we're getting rid of this show.
Yeah.
And when they say, but we're going to put you on for half an hour, he perks up. Wait. I'm getting the Tonight Show back?
Right.
No, it's not the Tonight Show. It's going to be your show, Jay Leno show, but it's at 11:30. And Debbie Vickers, his producer, is like, well, what is it? What is that show? What do we do?
Yeah.
Well, you do a monologue, a comedy bit, and you have one guest.
God.
That's the show. And his initial feeling is, Jay was all in. He was like, okay, you know, let's go. Like, but he does say, what about Conan?
Right.
What? And they're like, well, we're going to have Conan move to 12:05.
Don't worry about Conan. Piece of cake.
Yeah. And well, for him, it's like, well, okay, Conan keeps the Tonight Show.
Right.
That's great for him. And I get out of this mess. So he's in. He's in. He jumps in. He's all in. And again, now they've told something, set it up with Jay, and have not said anything to Conan.
Right.
And then that set up the incredibly famous meeting, which I got enough people in that room, I could really document this meeting of them calling these two NBC executives, and they called Conan in and Jeff Ross in,
mm-hmm.
and said, okay, here's the plan. We're going to bring Jay back to 11:30, 5, and you'll go to 12:05, but you'll have the Tonight Show. You'll have the Tonight Show.
In name only.
You still have the t-shirts that say the Tonight Show.
That's where Conan uttered the immortal words, what does this guy have on you?
What does Jay have on you?
Right.
Yeah.
What does Jay have on you?
I remember after that meeting, I was at my desk. This was in the morning. And I got a call at my desk. I'm like, hello. And it's Conan. He goes, look out your window. And I looked out the window and it was down below. It was Conan and Jeff down on the sidewalk next to the studio. And he's like, come on down. We'd like to chat with you. And so I went downstairs. I think they were just like, you know what? Who knows? Maybe that
knows
building's
what's in
bugged.
That building?
Who knows?
Mm-hmm. The building's so, bugged.
I mean, not really, yeah. But it was just like, they're
yeah.
like,
yeah, we need to talk.
I don't think Conan was
they're
in a
like,
rush.
We don't want this in Bill Carter's book. Right,
right, get right. off NBC property. Immediately. Right.
But maybe Conan wasn't in a rush to run back into the building and start the workday. So
yeah.
I went outside and they just told me what happened. And I think I was laughing at the insanity. It just, I didn't think anything could get more insane than the 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
11:30 setup. And now I was just like, okay,
they've lost their minds.
It's like origami. And now they're folding it down into it. They keep folding it into tinier little origami. And now it's just like a little ball of paper.
Yeah.
I was like, well, wow. Okay. And you know, the initial thing was just not discussing it, but just kind of let that sit in your mind and let it mm-hmm. marinate and yeah. figure out what we'll do next.
Yeah, well, it took Conan a little bit of time,
right,
to see what he wanted to do.
Sure.
He didn't make a precipitous decision.
He usually like something big. He'll let things marinate, and
yeah,
I think he believes he'll come to the right decision. Usually, you know, for as to how to go. Well, so.
So he hires this kick-ass lawyer.
Right.
And they have this powwow, and everybody strategizes what to do. And Conan is pretty adamant about it. And he basically says he's going to write a manifesto
right.
saying what he wants to say.
I think he kind of ad-libbed the manifesto mm-hmm. in the meeting with the lawyer and his... And
yes.
They were like, oh, that's how you feel. I think the attorney, Ms. Glazer, is like, you know what? Why don't you go away and write up how you feel? And maybe there's...
Yep.
And so he worked on it, you know, all weekend and came up with a manifesto.
Everybody in the room was like, you can't do that. You can't do that. But she was like, no.
Right.
Let's let him do it. Let's hear what it is. Let's let him do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And was this something that he would say on the air and he had to run it by everybody first?
No, he put it out. He didn't read it on the air.
It was a written statement.
Yeah.
It was to people of the earth.
Right.
Yeah.
He wrote to the people of the earth, put it out there. And
just about how, you know, he always loved the Tonight Show and was,
mm-hmm.
you know, excited to be hosting it. And
very notably,
yes,
he did not quit.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He did not say, and I'm quitting.
Well, that would have been...
He did not do that.
That would have been a legal situation.
A very poor decision legally.
Yeah, then you don't get unemployment.
Right, exactly.
That they had to deal with his contract and deal with his situation. He wasn't giving them the easy out of quitting.
Right.
He was saying, this is unacceptable to
right.
me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he was basically saying.
And so you know, the statement, he got it just the way he wanted it and went out at 12 noon and kind of everybody picked it up. When did you, what was your relationship to this story at this time?
Well, it was a little weird because, you know, they have a press tour that takes place in January and
for TV critics.
And it was going on at this time, crazily.
Okay.
So I was in LA getting, you know, updates constantly. And I'm talking to Gavin Pallone, his manager.
Conan's manager.
And Jeff and everybody. And I'm talking to NBC. I'm talking to Jeff Gaspin, whose idea was this crazy new configuration.
Jeff Gaspin was an NBC executive.
And it's almost minute by minute stuff is happening. And I'm filing like crazy. I never left my hotel room.
So you're getting constant updates on this almost in real time.
Yeah, basically. Basically, and of course, I know I'm being massaged by two sides, you know?
Right.
Yes.
And I know everybody, and I know, you know, what kind of guy Gavin is and what he tries to do. And I know, and Jeff, who I trust totally, and I know he's going to be honest with me. And a couple of the NBC people I knew well enough to say, Mark Graboff was a guy I dealt with who was very straight with me. Mm-hmm. He was their head of business affairs. And they're all trying to say, well, we think it'll work. NBC, we think it'll work. We think it'll work. And I'm hearing from Gavin, we're going to blow the building up. We're going to blow the place apart.
Right.
You know, basically, right. It was sort of those two things. And then the manifesto comes out and I'm like, well, I mean, this is basically, Martin Luther tacking the thing to the church door or whatever. And there's no going back from that. So,
right. I think Jeff Ross famously was just like, all right, just think about it one more time before we hit the send button. Uh-huh.
Exactly. That's in the book. Him standing up and saying,
yep.
Remember what you're doing. You blow this up, it's blown up.
Right.
And Conan walked out of the room saying, blow it up.
Yep.
That was his word, blow it up. And that's what happened. It blows up. But uniquely, again, the same thing with Letterman in a way. He's on the air. He's off the air.
Right.
He's on the air. They're negotiating to pay him off and have him leave. And he's on the air for, I don't know, 2 weeks, was it, Mike, or something like that?
Another 2 weeks.
Just having a blast kicking the hell out of NBC.
Using that budget.
Right. We were so focused and we had such a big piece of meat to dig into comedically.
Mm-hmm.
It all just gushed out. And he was, and I think Conan loves... He loves having a kind of an adversary to play against comedically, and he loves to go against authority comedically. And so this was, well, the ultimate
the man
setup for that. Yeah.
So it was great television. And interestingly, it was great television elsewhere because Letterman was going crazy.
Letterman and Kimmel.
And Kimmel was going. Yeah. Kimmel was going crazy with it.
Yeah.
You know, and Dave comes on and says, you know, if they take your show away, you know what you do? You quit. You don't hang around in the lobby and say, I'm down here in the lobby. Come pick me up. It was just amazing.
Right.
Those 2 weeks of television were just amazing. But I have to say, I'm watching it and I'm laughing because Conan is fantastic. But I'm hurting for him too. You know, I was like, this is a guy whose dream has just been exploded.
Right.
At the end of this, there's going to be a crash. I just felt like it. It was, we can have our fun while we're on the air, but
right.
It was a bad thing to do to a human being.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's my feeling. And a talented human being can then create some laughs out of it.
Right.
But it doesn't stop being a bad thing.
Yeah. Those last 2 weeks. Yeah. It was amazing TV. And the final episode, you know, his final statement at the end of the show was...
Yeah, that I remember that. I mean, because I wasn't watching everything. I mean, all of this I'm honestly learning about from you, Bill, because I wasn't as involved in, I didn't write for Conan yet. So I just as a consumer, wasn't aware of all the ins and outs of the corporate decision making. But I definitely watched that final episode. And that was really, I mean, had an impact on people my age. It was like, everyone was quoting Conan's final speech and it was getting memed out and, you know, it was all over Twitter. And so that was a really, I think, kind of the beginning of Conan's social media presence too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He started his Twitter account a week or two after that last episode. No, people still young.
Yeah.
People. Yeah. Jesse, your age. mentioned that last show and that speech a lot where
People were getting tattoos of it. It was crazy.
Yeah. Just about don't be cynical, you know, being cynical.
Don't be cynical.
Mm-hmm. One of the worst traits you can give into. And but you know what? After that, I forget who came up with the idea to do a tour, and because he wasn't allowed on TV for 9 months.
Right.
As part of the contract.
Yes.
As part of the contract. So then someone had the idea it'll go on tour. And that's became the, you know, legally prohibited from being on television tour.
Mm-hmm.
He just threw himself right into that. And we started writing material for it. And before we knew it, we're out on this 42 city tour. So that was an amazing experience. Bill, I think you went to a lot of those shows.
I went to 3 of them.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the first one, which is in Oregon.
Right, in Eugene, Oregon.
Then I went to the one in LA and the one in New York.
And I'd always see you and I'd be like, he's the one who's caused all this. I know it. Yeah. And now he's writing a book.
I stirred the pot. But I want to say,
yeah.
Before the tour, I interviewed Conan for the book, right?
Uh-huh.
And he was generous as always. And Jeff had said to me, well, you know, you probably need him for several times. So why don't you do like an hour, 90 mm-hmm. minutes the first time, whatever. And I'm like, okay, whatever he mm-hmm. wants. So I went over to his house and I hadn't seen him personally since he left the air. And he looked kind of haggard.
Mm-hmm.
he had grown his beard.
Yeah.
He gotten really thin.
Yeah.
Really, really thin. And he was a raw wound, to be honest, initially in that interview. So much so that the first, I'd say, a half hour, 45 minutes, I just was like, I'm not using any of this because it's not, he's just too viscerally upset about what happened to him. And it was understandable. I'm like, I know he doesn't want me to portray this. This isn't really him. This is,
it's like him processing something that just happened.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I said, I have to somehow switch this up. And I just started to ask him about
gardening,
just how he sort of knew he was a funny person as a kid. And I knew I would do some biographical stuff. And, you know, we started to talk about him discovering this when he got to Harvard, you know, and, you know, going on stage for the first time and feeling this rush when somebody laughed at him, you know, like, and then that opened him up. Like that made him, you know, feel like, oh yeah, this is a good thing to talk about, you know? So I was there, I'd say 4 or 5 hours.
Oh my God.
You know.
But that's, you know what? That sounds really healing. Like you helped kind of.
Well,
yeah, therapeutic.
I think that was important to get in touch.
Yeah, we worked through all that. But then he got, you know, very specific. We got very specific about all the details and all the things went on, which is what we wanted and all that. But, you know, that raw emotion was not. I mean, I'm sure someone would say, oh, you should have portrayed that. But I'm like, no, I don't think that's what you do. You don't take advantage of that when a guy's in that kind of frame of mind. And then I saw him in Eugene and he was tremendous. Like, you know, he was on fire again as, you know, as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt that was, you know, gratifying to think he could come back like that.
He was doing his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it was a damaging thing to do to a talented guy, and you know he have to dig deep and come back from that, which I think he did.
And well, you know what? I think for him, he was just used to everything working out, and and I imagine taking over for Letterman like that, and then you know facing all those hurdles and turning it into something incredible. I just don't think this computed and also we were all in shock that. We were only given 7 months because all the precedent was there was an understanding you need time to grow and to.
Yes. And I think we all felt the same thing would happen that happened at 12:30, you know?
Yeah,
exactly.
There would be a period where it was rocky. It was not exactly what you were going to do, even though there were moments of brilliance, which is exactly what happened before.
Right.
And then people would start to settle in and there'd be something else that Conan did where people say, wow, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden it would be like, and his audience, which was the younger audience, would fill in all these empty spots.
Right.
And you'd be a year, 18 months in, and all of a sudden people are saying, wow, Conan's really hitting his stride. Wow.
Right.
You can't miss Conan. You got to watch that show. That, I mean, that would have almost inevitably occurred.
Right.
If they could have had the patience to take that. But, and I do think this is true, the network was not totally free. They had this revolt happening with these affiliates. It was a very, you know, it was a really bad situation. And it was obviously exacerbated by the Jay thing at 10 o'clock. If that would not have happened, they would have had no option but to say, let's
give it time.
Conan, play out. Let's just give it time. Let's let it play out. But they had a disaster they had to solve. And, you know, I think it's easy to say, well, the solution they came up with was designed to get rid of Conan. And I don't think so.
I don't think they meant it that way.
They were just throwing spaghetti against the wall. And,
right.
Yeah. And they were hoping, they were hoping Conan would say, okay, it's bad, but I can tolerate this for another year or two. And then he'll go. Mm-hmm. Then he'll go.
Right.
And they presented it that way. And they presented it that way to Jeff Ross. And Jeff said to NBC, oh, get out of here with that BS. They're going to have to carry Jay out toes up.
Right.
He's not going to walk out of this
right,
job.
Right, of course.
We now know that for sure.
Right, 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 right. So, no, it's almost like Conan had to be in that situation. Someone had to just go, this is all insane. It's gotten so insane.
Yeah, it's like a bad breakup.
I have to speak up about it. Yeah,
where the other person just acts so badly that you're like, you know what? I'll just break up with myself then.
No, I think that's why the public reaction was so overwhelming, because it had just gotten to this point of insanity where it's like, you know, okay, Conan's finally going, okay, this is crazy and has to change dramatically.
What I was going to say is, of course, I'm writing a book with more than one character, so I'm talking to Leno the whole time, right?
Yes.
Right.
You know, his point was, why did they make this move on me to begin with?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I was winning. Why did they make this move? And it was a fair point.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, why am I being punished for doing what they asked?
Right.
Succeeding. He kept saying, who ever in the history of television has taken the number one guy off the air?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
For no reason. You know, that was completely understandable situation, point of view. And then, of course, the thing he, part of the reason he kind of went along with it was he didn't want to now be blamed, as he was blamed for denying Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, Letterman had been a friend of his, way different from Conan. They started in comedy together, and he owed Dave. His career was in the dumper because he was not a favorite of Carson, couldn't get on the show. And Dave put him on that 12:30 show all the time.
Right, yes.
And gave him a profile. So he owed Dave his career, honest to God.
Right.
He owed him his career.
On television.
On television.
Yeah.
So that's why he was constantly portrayed as Brutus or somebody, you know, or a guy who stabbed someone in the back.
Right.
You know, he would open to me and say, I just don't want that to happen again. I don't want that to happen again. And damn if it didn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And worse. It was worse the second time.
Right.
Because, you know, you had basically people saying, you know, the guy had the job and he took his job away. You know, like you.
Right. Essentially.
And I think he was also damaged by the process. He was damaged by this process. But, of course, he would constantly make the point, again, fair point, that when he finally got the Tonight Show again, he went back to number one. He did get it back to number one. So, you know, that was what he lived for. Now, the fact remains, and I think this was also predictable, is that, you know, people don't talk about Jay Leno's Tonight Show. They don't talk about what he did with the Tonight Show.
Right.
He was a very effective host who did the job perfectly fine. But he didn't add to late night, didn't make it fresh and new. And we did this documentary about the history of late night. And you just didn't hear people saying, well, you know, you couldn't miss Jay Leno tonight or whatever. Whereas people like Letterman and Conan constantly were referred to as the innovators, the people who young people in college couldn't miss. They had to watch it because he was doing things they didn't believe anybody had ever done before. And in the end, that's kind of your legacy. The ratings are not really a legacy. The ratings are financially important for the corporation, but they're not particularly important for your career.
Right.
Except you make a lot of money. But
yeah, that's well put.
Yeah. I mean, when Conan wrapped up his TBS show, all these, you know, like Seth Rogen and Jack Black and all these other, Will Ferrell, all these other really great comics, Bill Hader, they all came out and said, you know what? We grew up watching you.
Yes.
It was like a touchstone for us comedy wise. And I had never even thought about all that. And it was, I do think that is like such a great reward for
yeah,
and also a great affirmation as to what kind of work you'd been doing all that time.
You know, that's exactly the pattern of Letterman. Conan and Jimmy Kimmel grew up watching Dave. That was their guy, right?
Right.
He was their guy. Mm-hmm. And the next generation of people like that, Conan was their guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that is a great thing to live on when, you know, you're in a new stage of your career, whatever.
Right, right.
Or even toward the end of your career when you're not active anymore. But when you're in it, you want to win it.
Right.
Yeah.
It certainly killed Letterman that he was losing to Leno. It killed him. He didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
He hated it.
But he said in hindsight, right, that he's like, why was I obsessed with that?
Well, yeah, now looking back, all the obsession with air times and ratings, it doesn't hold up.
It's all over now. Yeah. That's all
it
gone.
It all seems so antiquated. Mm-hmm.
It is. It's antiquated.
It's crazy.
But damn, it was fun when it was going on.
Oh, my God. It really, like in hindsight now, it seems like someone constructed this small, tight little world, and then you put these players in it,
yes,
and they had to fight their way out of this box. You know?
Yes, mm-hmm. It was like a video game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, it was an early video game, and try to survive, try not to get killed. Yes.
And I also think another part of the early, you know, this whole five-year plan and what's going on. I mean, Jeff Zucker, who is the head of NBC, was like such a salesman that I feel like he was probably always massaging everyone, going, it's going to be great. It's all going to work out.
Yeah, he was.
Hey.
Which is what you do. I mean,
you think that was good. Now it's Jay at 10 and Conan at 11:30.
That's when you're a corporate guy, not a comedian. That's what you do.
Right.
You do that sort of thing. And we talked to Jeff in the late night documentary, and all credit to him for doing it. I mean, because he took a lot of brickbats, you know, from various sides. But he said, and it's certainly true, he said, what is absolutely true is despite all the mess at the end, he had 5 years with Conan and at 12:30 and Jay at 11:30, absolutely kicking ass and making a fortune for that network.
Yeah, that was kicking a can down the road. You know what I mean?
Except his point was he would have lost Conan.
Right.
He would have lost Conan
right
5 years earlier if he hadn't done that. And yes, that's true. It just was, as I said, it just pushed the problem to the end.
Yes, it pushed the problem
to the end.
Yeah.
Because I don't care who you are, you cannot make two go into one. It does.
No.
It's going to fail every time.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't wait for them to try it again in 10 years.
Well, but that's the thing. It won't happen again because nobody cares what time anything's on.
Yeah, that's true.
The other thing is, there are too many late night shows. Let's face it.
Yes.
Right.
It's just too many. So how do you stand out and how do you, you know, I mean, they're still good. Many of them are very good. I don't think you can fault the talent. The talent is terrific.
But Bill, what do you think now? Because there's streaming and streaming's growing and everyone's saying streaming's the future. But people are saying, oh, topical talk shows don't work on streaming. People don't.
I agree with that.
And meanwhile, broadcast keeps shrinking. So is it going to go back to like just very few late night shows?
That's what I think. Mm. Yes. That's what I think, Mike.
Yeah.
If you had two guys in late night, or a guy and a woman would be better. But let's say you had...
Or both women.
Yes.
I'm just trying to get laid.
I don't want to be prejudiced to anybody, but two or three shows, they'd still get traction, I think, because at the end of the day, you still may say, I want to hear what Colbert says about this. You know, there's still an audience for some of that.
Yeah.
And if they weren't diffused all over the place, you might concentrate enough.
Yeah.
Now, I may be crazy. I may be wrong, because once streaming completely takes over and you have a generation that likes to play games or whatever, you know, they may not even have the TV on. So, you know, whether or not they know there's going to be a show at 11:30 is open to question. But I've always thought that the format is incredibly facile. I mean, Steve Allen started this thing in 1954, for God's sake, right?
Mm-hmm.
It worked because if you have a very talented person, it's a fairly easy thing to do. I mean, it's hard to write good material, we know from you guys, but if you have a funny person, if you have a funny host, then you bring on some people that other people want to see, that's it. That's all you have to really do. You don't have to do a heck of a lot more than that.
Right.
And it doesn't cost a lot. One of the emphasis I made in The Late Shift was Steve Allen's first producer was debate. His name is Jules Green. And he said, you know, we can't have a thing where we got to pay Frank Sinatra, you know, 10 grand to come on. And we got to pay someone. So our rule is everybody gets minimum, right? I don't care who it is. You know, it could be some author you never heard of or some juggler, or it can be Frank Sinatra. They get, I think it was $200 at the time.
Right.
And that made all the difference because they didn't have to compete. I mean, imagine if when Letterman and Leno were going crazy, people would say, well, I'll pay you this. I'll pay Will Ferrell twice that amount.
Right.
You know, so it set up a system where those costs were fixed. You had to have a staff. You had to have a host. You had 5 days of advertising. A lot of time, a lot of money could come in. It could work very, very well, and it did. I mean, when Carson was on top, he was making way over $100 million in profit for NBC.
Wow.
Just that show. So
wow.
Yeah, and all that cross promotion that they're doing with other, you know, getting celebrities from other shows.
Absolutely.
On and, yeah,
they,
it makes
they
sense.
They want to promote their movies, and they want there's something about the format that makes sense.
Yes.
Right.
But Mike is right. It's streaming. How do you do that when you can watch the thing 3 weeks later? Mm-hmm. You know, 3 weeks later, the movie's out of the theaters.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. And especially now that all the celebrities are going on, you know, every single show. So you're seeing the same person kind of tell the same version of different stories.
Same anecdotes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we've had a nice long chat, haven't we?
We have. Thank you, Bill.
This was fantastic. Bill, we can't thank you enough.
It was great. I enjoyed it.
And I hope they still go and read, you know, both of your books about late night.
They should. Here it is, folks.
Yes.
Hold it up.
There it is.
There it is.
The War for Late Night. If you like the stories we were telling today, there's more in here.
Yes.
Even more.
Oh, my God. I never read it when it came out because I was like, no.
It's too close.
No.
You're in it, Sweeney.
It's too close. And I'm reading it now. And I was like, wow, it's a fantastic read.
It is.
Really.
Thank you.
It is so tightly woven and so dramatic.
I feel like I can't
put it down.
Yeah.
That's my goal.
And I love all the perspectives. It's, you get the full picture of everyone involved. It's really compelling, and it is really written like a great drama.
Thanks. That was my goal, and
you did it. It's
I've had a
terrific.
Blast. I've enjoyed it. I had a blast.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Bill, and thanks for doing the heavy lifting for us.
Anytime.
Thank you, Bill, for joining us.
Yes, thank you. We actually recorded for 2 hours with Bill, but
yes,
we cut it down to only the very best.
Yeah.
112 minutes.
Exactly. And then we started talking about antiquing and we really went off track. So you got the best of the best.
And hey, if you like our show, and I hope you do, you can support us by rating Inside Conan, an Important Hollywood Podcast on iTunes and leaving us a review. Don't be shy. It could even just be an emoji. Just leave one skull emoji. No, two skull emojis, and we'll know that that means you liked it.
You know what? Any emoji you leave, we will interpret as you really love us.
As positive, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Eggplants, frowning, it doesn't matter. You found something to love.
Yes, there's something for everybody here.
Oh.
And we still want your listener questions, even though we didn't have time this week. Please submit them. You can call us at 323-209-5303 or email us insideconanpod@gmail.com.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of great questions. We didn't have time this week, so next week.
But we will next week.
Yeah, maybe it'll be all fan questions. No, it won't. That'd be fine by me.
But you know what? We love you anyway. Inside Conan, an Important Hollywood Podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Sean Doherty. Our production coordinator is Lisa Byrne.
Executive produced by Joanna Solotaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
Engineered and mixed by Will Beckton.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
It's the Conan Show. Put on your hat. It's the Conan Show. Try on some spats. You're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf. It's Conan.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.